There we go.
So for me, I had
work-life balance, right?
Yeah, I like to say my undergrad journey went hand in hand with my like council journey as well. I had that really unique experience where I was elected each year. And I would like to say, like, for the record, I was elected with other counterparts. It wasn't just being acclaimed. That one year as VP events, though, I was acclaimed. But I mean, the other four, I had someone running with me, which made the position more meaningful.
Yeah.
It allowed opportunity for, like, I think Mike was echoing earlier about, or David about, you know, others having the same opportunities, and then the community deciding what they think is best.
Mm.
So for me, it was different roles, different hats, and each year I progressed and learned and had my own adversities and my own challenges. But what that did was it culminated to where I am now, and currently I'm working for a law firm, and a lot of the roles that I'm being given are very service oriented. It's very much towards being the face of the firm and being like the first person to greet the clients and stuff like that, because of what I've learned on council and about that servant leadership quality I learned under David's year, or that empowering others and building community in Mike's year. It was a culmination of many things I learned, and I can truly say, had I not been on college council, I don't know what other skills I would possess. I was really crafting my tools as I was crafting my grades, if that makes sense. You know, I was crafting my life skills on council with the people I was meeting, the connections I was building, the networks I was making. I can go to Montreal a week from now and I can speak to the promoter at a nightclub and say, hey, I'm bringing in a group. And he'll give us an access point from there. Or I can go to a hotel because I know the concierge is in the front lobby because they know us for so long. So in a way, there's like a familial aspect of it too, where people just know you, hey, you're from McLaughlin, or hey, that guy with the wolf shirt, you know, like they know who you are, and they know like the kind of people you were and what you represented as a community. And that's something I learned, just about networking and working with people. I think working with people was the key.
Yeah, through the conflict, the good times, the bad times.
I like that you mentioned conflict too, because
it's a big part of
in terms of like conflict management, conflict resolution, dealing with crisis.
Yes.
I think
safe talk.
Yeah, if you're dealing with parents during orientation week, or if you're dealing with students who are freaking out about their grades, or if you have people that have conflicts during trips or events, you learn how to de-escalate that really quickly. And I think it's a really good life skill to have. So when you get you know, older and you start your professional career.
Yeah, I had a very sheltered lifestyle. For me, like we don't really see drunk people as much as we do at home. But when I get a phone call from the concierge saying one of your students is sort of hazing around the lobby, seems like he needs a little bit of help, you're not going to immediately go and power trip or try to figure out the worst possible scenario. There was an art almost in terms of being a leader, but also being a friend to these students. And I think that was the balance that I had to learn, because in the beginning it was very much service-oriented, like, you know, figuring out this is unconstitutional. You can't be drinking in the lobby.
No, you're more like rules. You're more black and white.
And I still am, I think, to this day. But point is, like, the students will trust you more if you take them under your wing as a friend. And that happened during Frosh Week, where we had students as well, you know, certain conflicts. But my approach was not just to dismiss them from Frosh, send them home. It was to have an honest conversation with them, to sit down with them and say, listen, we're not just going to, just because of one poor lapse in judgments, we're not going to completely take you out of the context here. We're going to give you an opportunity to go home, sleep it off, and come back tomorrow, and hopefully you can, you know, sober up, whatever the case may be. But that was my approach, at least as president, to give them a second chance. You know, and I would have appreciated that too if I did, but
it's
I didn't.
It's a developmental opportunity for them, right?
David, you said you came from a leadership background. What was that?
Well, the sort of the part-time jobs I had leading up to presidency was running a karate school, running summer camps, whether they were tennis camps, multi-sports camps. And then a lot of, very briefly, growing up, I grew up like extreme social anxiety. And so my parents forced me into these team environments. And then prior to coming to university, I was running a provincial lobby group for Francophone students with the Ministry of Education. And so through that, you get a lot of training as well. I was a student trustee for the school board as well. And those were experiences that I got thrown into, but that became extremely developmental. So I came into MCC with all of that ag experience already. And so for me, it wasn't really overwhelming, because I was like, okay, I can see the patterns. I've done it 9 times in different contexts. We've got different people, different environment, same tools, empowerment, process, details, start with the heart, build the relationships, continue with the head, so inspiring people with a vision, a common vision, and then give people the hands, tools to carry out that vision. So that was sort of the background. Yeah.
One of the best analogies held at the retreat, the heart, mind, and tool analogy.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
And I still run with it today when I'm managing professional staff, right? I think it's constantly applicable. And then it's about surround, and then you can never do something that, I always, one of the things I learned is the bigger the dream, the bigger the team. And so that's what I was really going in for when meeting people like Sarah, like Mike, and the other council members we had. Everybody's absolutely essential. Just about building the relationship where they become and feel like a leader, their own leader. Yeah.
That's true. And it helps a lot with delegating as well, because you think about, you know, I don't need to be doing all the work.
That's right.
You know, I don't need to be going to all the meetings. You know, I don't need to sit in all the club meetings if I know Sarah can handle it. He's already a leader in that field. He's got it. And then it makes your life easier.
Yeah.
Right? It makes your life easier.
It does, yeah.
And then you can do work longer. You don't have to worry about day-to-day stress that's building up like crazy. So.
Yeah.
I think in terms of support, one of the other aspects of support that I personally got during my role on MCC and in McLaughlin was in a very unsurprising area. It was actually at the gym in Dynamax.
Yeah.
It's where David and I we took what I would like to call, quote-unquote, our inhibitions or our stresses. You're mentioning stress. We'd go out in the weights and just, we'd be planning events and we'd be talking about stuff regarding council or just life stuff, things we're going through personally. It was in that space, though, that we really, Mike, too, and he actually made his debut when he became president. That one summer, Mike came down and was like, I'm going to work out this year. I'm going to get Jack for presidency. And we were so happy to see him come out. But he was one of he proved us all wrong. He actually came out and was consistent. That was the best part. But
he's so strong, too.
Yeah.
He never go to the gym, but he's so strong.
You should see his forearms. They're huge.
Well, you worked for Lowe's stocking for a while, right?
Yeah, I worked for Lowe's, like, loading up merchandising the cars. Yeah. I worked in Leon's warehouse and stuff. So.
Mike is, actually, you know what? These two guys are really hard workers. Always, I think what's consistent is, like, since young age, working very, very hard. And I think that work ethic was very evident, right?
Definitely.
Well, you had been involved at York far before you came to Boston, too.
Yeah, I always tried to get involved. I always see every opportunity like that as you make things, what you put in is what you make out of it, you know what I mean? So if you want to make a difference, if you want to make friends at university or wherever it is, you just got to get involved, you know, go to some meetings, go to some events, talk to people, socialize, and you never know what's going to come out of it.
Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah.
It's like the decision to go to Frosch, like that was the kicker, that walk with Mike to get my U card.
Yeah, because you were at a, if I may, like a low point in your life.
Yeah. So personally, I was going through some personal issues at the time, and I actually told that to David. I opened up naturally, but what Frosch really did for me, as cliche as it is, it truly empowered me to take those negative energies and make it something positive and give it back to the community. And like, I constantly loved doing that, constantly doing that.
And actually, before coming to McLaughlin, so in grade 12 when I was running that provincial lobby group, I burnt out over the summer, so like adrenal fatigue, so my white blood cell count was low, blah, blah, blah. So I came into university, I signed up for Frosch Week anyway, but I with a commitment I made to myself to not get involved again, ever again. That's what I told myself. And McLaughlin did its job, and then I, you know, obviously, that's it. Now you bleed orange, right? So it has an effect on people, isn't it?
Every time I go to the hospital, the doctor's always shocked. Like, hey, why is your blood
orange?
Is it orange?
Is there anything else you want to say about your year?
I don't know. What do you guys remember? Ian, what do you remember from, like, us?
2012. This was your final year as master, if I'm not mistaken.
2012 to 13.
Yeah, this was it. This was the final year.
You were 11-12.
I was 11-12.
Yeah.
Sorry, your second last year.
Susan was there for a bit.
And then Ian came in.
Ian came back.
Yeah.
I'll never forget this. I remember we were talking about changing some of the rules around drinking and formal and stuff. And I was really stressed out about it. Like you said, it was stress. And I'm thinking of a game plan. I'm thinking of a strategy. I'm trying to rally the troops. And Ian, I call Ian. I'm like, Ian, we got a problem with it. You know, they're trying to change the rules. Come on down. And you came down to the office, you sat on the couch, and I sat there, and you were like, Mike, what do you think about it? Like, what do you think about this rule change? And I said, it's going to mess up this, it's going to cause us problems, we're going to be stressed out. And my whole game plan was trying to convince Ian to get on our side. And the first thing Ian says is, yeah, okay, all right, I'll just talk to the administration, we're just going to do it next year then. The changes won't happen this year. And I'm sitting there just like, well, that was easy. And so, Ian was like, you know, I'll write a letter to, Ian did his due diligence and said, you know, talk about the steps you're going to take to make sure everything is safe and everything's going to be fine. And I'll write a letter to the VP students, and that'll be it. And I just thought, that was great. Yeah, I love this guy. And but it shows how, you know, Master Green was always there for students. Always had our back, no matter, you know, what it was.
Absolutely.
You were always there for students and student leaders to make a difference and make the university more vibrant. So I give you credit for that, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Like, when I came in, you were likely master, 2011? 2007.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I saw you from afar, but everybody just had amazing things to say about you. So I was very excited when coming into presidency. Mm-hmm. But I think you may have gone on sabbatical, and then Master
yes,
Timmick.
Yes, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. So I was sad at first. I didn't know who was taking over. I was very sad. I was like, oh no, I won't get to know Master Green, because literally the staple of McLaughlin College during that era. But then, so I had Master Dimmick, who we were really fortunate. It was also awesome, right?
Yeah.
That was cool.
She was really cool. Actually, I remember one time, I don't know if this is on the record or off the record.
I know, I was wondering if I should say that.
I'll do lots of
Ian will figure it out.
Editing.
Okay.
But I remember we had a meeting with all the presidents from all the different colleges, and they came over to Mac, and some of them didn't have the greatest relationship with their masters, and some of it was pretty, you know, pretty rough.
Yeah.
And we go in there, and Susan was in the office, and she came around to the meeting room, and she was like, I didn't know you guys were having a meeting. I didn't know you guys were coming. Wait one sec. And she goes, and she comes back with like a 12-pack of beer, and she just pops it on the table for all the student leaders. We're all just kind of hanging out and drinking and stuff. And all of the other students were like, this is your master? She's amazing. We want her. They're thinking about changing affiliation. So
another thing, you know, McLaughlin should be proud of the relationship with the master's office is, I think our year was the first year that SCLD paid for all of us to work in the master's offices.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that was the first year, but we had already been doing that. So McLaughlin had already been doing that. Already had the relationship. It was quite a few years. Mm-hmm. And so for us it was natural. And so we had one of the colleges, I think McLaughlin and maybe a few others. Mm-hmm. I think Winters. We had very strong relationship with our master's office compared to other colleges. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So that, I don't know. I just want that. That was just something that we benefited from mutually, I think.
Yeah, even with Lillian. Lillian always said, I'm going to take care of you guys. We're going to have a great relationship. And it always was.
Yep.
It always was. She always made sure that whatever needs we had, if it was, you know, dealing with, you know, getting a cleaner to come or getting someone to change something or fix something or whatever it was, space, Lillian would always support us. And she always said, you know, you have the job over the summer. We'll work together. You know, if there's things that MCC can help the master's office with in terms of the lunch talk series or whatever it was, or help with some funding.
Academic orientation.
We always work together to
public policy lecture. And she gave us the keys to like all the doors, and we were responsible with it, you know?
Yeah.
It was really cool. Like, it was really once-in-a-lifetime
experience. That goes for Shakira, that goes for Vicky. Yeah. Vicky. Mm-hmm. That goes for the entire staff at the master's office.
Antoinetta at the time.
Yeah. Antoinetta. Yeah. You know, these ladies really, like, not only did they like help us, they fed us, they supported us, they had copious amounts of coffee in the master's boardroom, those late nights. But I think truly we were blessed to have that support.
Yeah, we were.
Sometimes we didn't even deserve it, but they still had our backs. So
the master's office was
they had faith in us.
A home
away from home.
Even when the council wasn't a home. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You could always go
there.
Talk. I'd go speak to Terry Conlin.
The legend.
Terry Conlin.
I sat down with Terry.
How can we forget that?
And he has a way of just making things like, I don't know, he just talks through it. And
everything is good with Terry. You feel you're safe.
It's like counseling, but not like
I think it's like the inner hippie in Terry that it's like, he's got that Bob Marley philosophy, like everything's going to be okay. Like, don't worry about it.
He's like, you do realize, without saying this, he's like, you do realize this is so minuscule compared to world's problems right now, right? And you're like, yeah. Without saying it like that.
Glad we have that covered, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So then after Mike, you finished what year?
2012.
So then, and when did you start?
2013. So there was one year
in between.
In between where I was VP events. And this was the term that I...
So the president was somebody else?
The president was someone else. And at the time, my role was sort of... I started realizing I'm doing all these different roles. And though I was asked to run for president too that year, I didn't feel ready. And I dismissed the idea completely. Because I knew it wasn't the time.
We had a rule, didn't we?
I think you guys really inspired me to think that way, too.
We had a rule about presidency. It's like, run when the community... has asked you to be our leader.
I really honored that quality, and I think that was something I listened to since my first year, because people would be telling you, like, you know, I see you as college president, and as a first year student, it sounds great, it sounds amazing to have someone have that much faith in you. But once you do the actual work, you realize quickly, like, you know, it's a lot of work, it's a lot of sacrifice away from your family, your friends, your loved ones, even your academics to some extent. And some people bow out because they can't handle the stress. But what constantly drove me was the passion for community and for seeing an opportunity to really build something great here. And looking back, I visioned myself, actually, it's kind of cool, it's like today, like sitting across the table having dinner with Master Green, David, Mike, you know, these were like people who inspired me from a very young age, and to this day, like, we're breaking bread together today, but we're talking about all these changes and all these positive changes. And that's kind of what I visioned. I wanted to give myself that opportunity to look back and say we did it, you know? So that ultimately led me to run for VP events, but that year was great. We had solid recruitment. We had the highest number of Frosh registrants through this Frosh orientation called Project Orange. Mm-hmm. I think we had 416.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That was a record-breaking number.
Yeah. Yep.
With co-chairs were Rene Escobar and James Murray, and the president of the time was Yvonne Wickham. Mm-hmm. And they did a fantastic job at promoting Frosh and Orientation mm-hmm. Week. It was cool because they actually promoted in a very an interesting way. They started making they revitalized the YouTube channel that was not there for so long. So we had all these great things happen in 2010, 2011. One thing was communications wasn't up to par at the time with technology. You had Facebook booming, you had YouTube booming. So they revitalized Twitter.
1080p video. 1080p. Like, we didn't have that when we were.
You now had your orientation shares in a Backstreet Boys music video, or in a skit, which like was being launched from a very early get go. So that humorous aspect of getting the high school students involved from a very early stage, getting them engaged on Twitter, I think, like David was mentioning, was a huge thing on top. And then my role specifically that summer was to think about newer events. So we brought back the ski trip for the first time in 3 years. We subsidized events a bit more. We actually opened bridges to cross colleges. So we started collaborating with Complex 2, with Stong, Bethune, Calumet. And we started seeing, hey, our distant cousins in the corner there, we can work together to make a hockey night or something simple like a pub night, or go off campus and do a ski trip with Winters. So a lot of collegiality, cross-college collegiality was the main theme of that year. And from at least an events perspective, and I think the college itself was transitioning out into different areas where Master Green was also stepping down, and we were going to be appointing a new master, so the search for the new master was happening as well. So it was an interesting change between the dynamics of the roles and the uncertainty of the future of McLaughlin's current leaders and current power roles itself. I think that, was for me, was the biggest reflection I had, because the following year I'd be running for president, and I really wanted to see who my team would be, but also who were my elders would be as well. And that's when the search, when the search for David Layton Brown, Master Layton Brown, I think that was the culmination of what pursued next. But you had a point? You have something to say?
Oh, do you have any funny stories?
Oh, funny stories.
Yeah, we're pretty serious, aren't we?
Yeah, we're getting really deep. Funny stories.
Probably.
Yes. Okay, so first year, we made a formal video.
Which first year? Oh, your first year?
Yeah,
okay.
And it was for formal.
2010, mm-hmm. 11.
We had a James Bond theme video where I was in my slippers and shorts, and David was in the skit with me and Mike, and basically what was it? It was like a Mission Impossible.
Actually, we had a number of videos that year, yeah. A Mission Impossible theme, and I think we were making fools of ourselves, but.
the Dynamax promo video.
as well made fools of ourselves.
The swag videos.
Also made fools of ourselves.
We'd be selling t-shirts. This was David literally on a standing rocking chair.
And people don't know me to be like self-deprecating, so it's kind of funny.
It is really cool. It's actually on YouTube right now. You can watch it.
Wow.
I think it's somewhere out there. Or on Facebook.
It must be.
Nick Sagan has the clip. But basically, David's like in this rotating chair, and he's moving around 360, and it just says, you know, quote, buy our shit for $5. Welcome t-shirts.
Yeah.
But the funny part was, it's the taboo has been removed. The president is endorsing it, so you might as well go ahead and buy it now.
Yeah.
So that was cool. I think that was awesome. And we sold a lot of t-shirts because of that, too.
We did. We sold so many.
You helped.
Yeah.
There's so many other funny moments. But
remember we did a popular song at the time was called Black and Yellow by Wiz Khalifa.
Oh, yeah.
Me and the guys were just kind of like hanging out one day, and then it was like later at night, and then there was a bunch of council members around, and I was like, let's just do like our own like rap version of it. And so we did, and we just started like breaking down these different raps, like going at it in the council office. And then we were like, you know, taking shots at U of T and other colleges, but we were just kind of goofing around. But we had so much fun just laughing our faces off, because it was so ridiculous. But it was so good. I don't know.
That was awesome. Yeah, Mike is a glorified rapper at McLaughlin throughout the alleyways. He might be able to throw some bars out right now. But that was funny. We also had some of our council members as well, like just camping out in some of the student spaces as well. Like we had one of our friends who was just hanging out in one of our spaces, and he actually made like a temporary like climber in between like the office space itself. It was just there temporarily, but it was just nice to see, like, you know, literally people are living here, and that was funny to see, I guess. But funny stories. Our meetings were pretty funny.
Yeah.
Some people were just like interestingly.
We sometimes have meetings at 10 to 12 p.m.
Yeah, it's like, midnight. We're here till 12 a.m.
Yeah.
Still.
Midnight. Tarisha would bring like a whole box, like a whole bag of oranges. Like she'd bring like 20,
oranges.
30 oranges, and she would just be eating it during the meeting. You'd have like this huge pile of leftovers.
What did she used to say too? Like, we'll squash them like a.
She'll take
cockroach.
She'll squash it. She'll step on it.
Whenever we had like a thing that we had to like an obstacle to cross. What'd she say?
Oh, she's like, yeah, we like squish it
like a bug.
Like a bug, or
She was like, she was very well, like her. She was passionately voiced in the meeting. So in between all the orange peels and stuff, when she finally had a chance to speak, and she put her hand up, she set the record straight for the audit, and that was a very interesting encounter.
She was our finance person.
She was our finance person, And what else? We had some stand-up as well at the MacFest. That was fun. Julian Jasneski, he's our glorified VP events extraordinaire. He did some stand-up comedy. So we had a lot of talent on our council. Like, people were very, very talented. We had singers on our council. We had comedians. We had some guys who were very much inept with video technology. They make like skits in the lounge, which are accessible online too. The big orange door.
Oh yeah, Jeff, that was this year too. That was a 2010 open year. Yeah, they were trying to create. Yeah, the big orange door was the first YouTube account.
Some of our cheers too, like that were, you know, just memorable. Like were created for the first time ever, you know, in McLaughlin, and I think that's something that people take pride in today. Ain't no party like a MacFrosh party, because a MacFrosh party don't stop. That's apparently it's like you say it and you say it faster and faster in redundancy.
This is not really funny, but it's something I was proud of.
Go ahead.
You know our McLaughlin water wars.
Yeah.
So whenever we do it against other colleges, I always thought we did really well because we actually used like strategy. You know, we had the long range pelters in position, and then we had the heavy artillery in a certain area, and then we had the runners. I don't know. We I think because McLaughlin folks are like political science and all that, we were pretty strategic. So it would show in the way we interacted with other colleges.
I think that ties into one of our greatest traditions, and that's having Master Green come in with his bagpipes. And that's probably one of the most epic introductions to Frosh. There's no Frosh without those bagpipes, or Master Green for that matter. But I think having that march, there's a video of me and you actually marching together.
Skin skin chilling.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Like, your skin crawling.
That
skin
inner Scottish warrior.
Yeah.
When you hear the Celtic backbells,
I feel the chill.
The adrenaline just starts kicking in. I just want to go and like go want to fight a war now. Just like save the people.
I remember for my frosh week when I was running it with Liam Walker and Kyla Dunraj, we ambushed our frosh. So we took them out thinking that they were gonna attack another a whole other college with like a water balloon fight, and then all of a sudden we would just all the leaders started going on the frosh themselves and throwing like all the water on them, and then there was like, this huge battle all of a sudden, and they had no clue. They didn't realize until they were fully encircled that they were like, oh wait, we're the ones getting
a proper ambush.
Beautiful ambush.
I think that was the first year that happened.
Yes. We did a lip dub in Niagara Falls, 2011. Where we basically sang the Frosh theme song, which was by a band named One Direction. No, not One Direction, sorry. Glad You Came. Glad You Came.
Yeah.
Oh, Glad You Came. Or was it for...
I was Glad You Came.
Was it the lift up for Wyatt Fest?
No. Sorry, there's two actually. The first one was your year, where we did a lift up for Every Damn Shufflin'.
Yes.
LMFAO, where literally you see like 50 Mac students meeting up in the center of Niagara Falls, and we're all shuffling and dancing together as a community. And the following year, where we did an actual lipta, where we sang out loud in public, and actually we had the most amazing part about all of this is we had locals just joining us, and it was like we're a community within a community within a community, and it's just everyone was coming together.
Yeah, liptas were very popular.
And those are all recorded too, so they're all online as well. I think you can watch that on YouTube. But I think those were like students coming out of their comfort zone, having a good time, showing that, you know, we can leave our territories and still be one big family. And I think that's the most beautiful thing about the college community. And I hope it stays forever, because that's, you know, it's important. It's formative for your undergrad, for sure. Something that I personally cherish a lot.
I remember when we went to the Eaton Center, and we did the flash mob.
Oh, yeah.
We'd have 200 people, like, walking casually, all, like, normal. And then all of a sudden they would just freeze.
One, two, three, freeze.
And then... everyone would just stop, and then there'd be like all these tourists walking through, like,
what the heck is going on here?
Yeah, just like 100 people just freeze that critical mass, and you're still walking.
Oh man, what else do we have? We had like November pub nights where we'd like draw like all these ridiculous mustaches on our face and stuff. Like St. Patrick's Day pub nights where just we're all leprechauns just dressed up in green, and it was fantastic.
Yeah.
What else do we have? There's like so many laughs, but you can't remember all the jokes, but you just remember laughing. You know what I mean?
I'd like to say, for the record, one of the legends of McLaughlin College Council, Tony Wong.
Oh,
yeah.
The Kingman himself.
Yes, Kingman.
He would lighten the mood in any day, any shape or form. No matter how stressful these meetings were, you give Tony the mic, and he drops two cents, it's over. Like, just all the stress, all the commotion is gone. It's just because he's funny, he made sense of what he was saying, because he understood where he was coming from, but... he never backed down. That's one thing I always loved, his grit, and he always spoke up in the meetings.
Yeah, very unassuming.
And always lighting the
very
mood.
Unassuming, and maybe people didn't respect him the way they should. But then he didn't let that kind of stop him, right?
Yeah.
But he was 2-time academic director of academic affairs, I think.
Yeah. And that was funny too, because we all knew him as Tony Wong, and then one day someone asked him, what's your Chinese name? And he said King Man Wong. And we all thought, your first name is King. That's amazing. And so everyone started bowing
down. I think he dedicated a whole meeting.
And that's what changed his like perception with everybody, right?
Yeah, everyone just stopped and was like bowing down to the King
Man. Yeah.
Just like
hundreds of people bowing down.
Hundreds of people. And then he'd be like, King Man Wong. And he just loved it. And
such a nice guy.
Yeah.
I think some extraordinary facts is the level of dedication our community had for us. And what I mean by that is, for example, when we had our tickets to our certain events, like Montreal, you'd have students lined up as early as 2 in the morning for the events to start at 10 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we had the entire college, like as if it was like a camp out. I'm not kidding, it was like a camp out.
I know.
I've never seen such a thing before take place, and each year it got bigger and bigger.
It's like we were selling iPads for the new generation.
We had people coming from all sorts of places, and it was just... that would introduce policy, that would introduce like different measures, but the commitment, dedication that our members of our community had.
To cheap tickets.
That was, bar none, one of the biggest highlights.
I remember one time when the day the tickets went on sale, I got a frantic call from security saying that we have a really serious situation in McLaughlin College. And I was wondering, what's happened? There are thousands of students lined up for something.
Thousands.
And they're blocking all the fire exits, and it's a real danger, and you got to do something about it right now.
Yeah.
Tell them to all go away. And I said, no, they can't all go away because they're lined up for these tickets they have to get.
Love
so
it.
So I remember going down and talking, this was before your time, I think, and talking to the president at the time, and we thought, well, maybe we can get the line to go over here, and we'll get the whole line to move over there, and we'll block the exits anymore.
We dedicated, it was actually the year in 2012, we dedicated a whole meeting. We made a blueprint, if you recall. We made an actual blueprint to like follow along with the following years. But amazing. I wouldn't say thousands, maybe a couple hundred, but yeah.
Definitely freak security out there.
Yeah. The fire hazards, they gotta go. Well, good luck.
When the fire alarm goes off, people will walk away. People will move.
Yeah. I would take my iPhone at the time, like I had my cell phone, I was like making videos of students just being like, hey, it's 4 a.m, and we're still here, you know, every hour, and just it would keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Ian, you should have told them it'd be a bigger security issue if we cancel selling the tickets.
You got riots.
I did tell them that.
Yeah.
They're telling me, the security people are telling the students to move and they won't move.
Yeah.
Dedication, you were saying.
Oh, man. That was turned out to be quite funny in the end.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, man, what else did we do that was just, like, hilarious? I remember we did our retreat and we just did, like, the most ridiculous, like,
at a
dance party, and we had, like, we'd be cooking pancakes and like flipping pancakes in the air and like.
Yeah, well, shout out to Tracy for letting us use her cottage that year.
Yeah, we gave different. We split the council. Did we split the council on teams and they had to like be in charge of breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and then they had to prepare the meals.
Something like that.
Yeah, I think we did that. Yeah, team building. Yeah.
What do you remember that was memorable from our years and from our like era?
What do I remember? Let me
open up the stresses.